comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, a place where you actually matter. Have you subscribed to the K-Files e-zine? And some of you send me email and you say, I'm so tired of hearing you say that. Well, yeah, but we have new people every night. And they need to know. It's our free weekly newsletter. And it's really free, no strings attached. It takes 10, 15 seconds to subscribe. Just go over to my website. You'll see the link that says K-Files e-zine right in the middle of the screen. Just click it, subscribe, and then you will be among those who know. NASA has found a very interesting and deep hole in the moon. Some of you know about that. It's over 200 feet across. It's very deep. And they're saying that this may be a good place to build a colony someday in that hole on the moon. Now, folks, this plays a rather huge role in what we're going to talk about here tonight. So keep it in mind, all right? We'll come back to it later in the show, but keep it in mind. It is important. It plays a role in what we're going to talk about. Now, I saw a skeptic on a UFO show on television who asked why, if extraterrestrials have visited other planets in our solar system and have visited Earth, why do we not find advanced skyscrapers as ruins of their past civilizations here instead of finding, you know, pyramids and rocks, rock buildings and stuff? And I thought it sounded like a reasonable question at first. And it sounds like a reasonable question until you do that most rare of human activities, thinking. Just a bit of minor gray cell activity blows away this line of skepticism and shows it to be both irrational and unreasonable. I'll show you why tonight. But the good news is, I am going to share with you the answer to that question. Why don't we find, if they are so advanced, why don't we find these advanced structures? Why do we find ruins that are made of rocks? I'll answer that question for you tonight. We're going to discover some amazing, astounding facts tonight that in fact may help us put a lot more pieces of the puzzle together. That would be the puzzle of UFOs, extraterrestrials, and forbidden archaeology. They are related, you know. There is a link. At least I think so, and I'm going to share that with you tonight. And I'm going to show those of you who are watching on KSS TV, I'm going to show you some things that may, in fact, blow your mind. I'll describe them for those of you who are on radio or cell phones or listening via computer. And but let me say, you really ought to join our members area so you can watch. Then you'll see them too. All right. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and we have some very, I think, astounding information for you here tonight. And I think it's going to be one of those shows where you go away from this show scratching your head and saying, wow, I think so. Because that's the effect, the reason I think so is that's the effect this information has had on me. Now, I've got a guest for tonight who's not actually here as a guest. You know him. He is the associate host here at the Kevin Smith Show. He does the Kevin Smith Show weekend edition. But he's joining me here tonight as co-host, and you will see why in just a moment. Jerry Wills. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, everyone.
Now, this is going to take just a few minutes for me to get this set up right so that you will understand what is being discussed here this evening. In a few minutes, I'm going to show you some photographs. Those of you who are watching on our KSS TV channel, I'll describe them for the rest of you who are listening by radio, cell phone, or computer. But for those of you who are members, you are watching it on, and you will see it on KSS TV. I want to make sure you understand that these pictures are not the point. These pictures are not the issue. They're not the point. These pictures have a purpose. The purpose is to help me make a point. And what is that point? Well, it's the answer to the question. The question of why are some archaeological sites sealed off by governments? Archaeologists are not allowed to dig. Other archaeological sites are welcomed by the governments, and they see them as, oh, that's great. It will eventually be a tourist attraction. But some of them get a really knee-jerk response, and they get sealed off. They get shut down. Now, in New Zealand, the government actually enacted a law forbidding the public from entering a controversial archaeological zone, and it's the Waipua Forest, and I know I'm not saying that right. It became a controversial site in New Zealand because an archaeological dig apparently showed evidence of a non-Polynesian culture that preceded the Maori. A fact that the tribe was not happy with. They learned of the results of the excavations before the general public did and complained to the government. The outcome was an official archival document, which clearly showed an intention by New Zealand government departments to withhold archaeological information from public scrutiny for 75 years. That's just one. There are others, and we've talked about the one in the Grand Canyon, and Jerry has talked with us about it, where back in the early 20th century, early 1900s, something very interesting happened. Someone discovered a cave in the Grand Canyon, high up on the cliff wall, went into it and found that it showed signs of civilization. And not only civilization, but he thought maybe Egyptian. He was no expert, but he said, you know, it looked like it could have been Egyptian. The Smithsonian Institute got involved and sent a team out to excavate, hired an archaeologist to go in there see what was the deal with this cave. And he went in. He came back to town. He bought all kinds of supplies. He hired extra help. And work went on for a while, and stuff was carried out of the cave. It was put on rail cars. It was carted off. You never heard what they found. I never heard what they found. And now they deny they ever did it. So, the question is, why? Another big, 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 more recent situation is Lake Vostok in Antarctica. Antarctica, of course, is the coldest place on the planet. Lake Vostok is a liquid water lake, meaning there's something that's heating up the water in that lake. It's a liquid water lake under 2 miles of ice in Antarctica. And at one end of that lake, there is a massive magnetic anomaly that is 65 by 45 miles square. Well, NASA went in, and they were all excited, and JPL went in, and they were all excited, and they were going to test some of their planned equipment, some of the equipment they had designed to possibly do some water drilling mission on Mars. But they very quickly, once that anomaly was discovered, exited, said, we're finished, we don't have anything else to do, and we're gone. And Vostok was sealed. Why? Tonight, I'm going to share with you a very hypothetical but very possible answer to why. Think about it, folks. Every month or two, there's some discovery of a dinosaur we didn't know existed, or they find another stone circle like Stonehenge, or they find this or that, and everybody's excited about it, and it's no big deal. Well, it's a big deal, actually. They're very excited. And then, sometimes, an archaeologist comes upon something that causes governments to clamp down and tell you, you can't go in there for 75 years. You don't need to know. They clamp down and take everything from the site and then deny they were there. In one case, what's the deal with this? Well, I think we have a possible answer, and I think it puts a lot of pieces of the puzzle together. Now, to do this, I've gotten some photographs. These photographs are not the point, but they help make the point. Okay? Enjoy the photographs, but don't think that we're trying to prove something about a photograph. These are examples of something bigger. So the first thing I want to do is I want to ask you, as I put this photograph on the screen, to take a good look at it and see if you can tell me what planet that's on. Now, for those who are just listening by cell phone or radio, actually, what we're looking at is a satellite photograph. It looks like, I think it looks like the moon, the color, the rocks and everything. It looks like it could be the moon. The only thing is there's this almost rectangular hole in the surface that's filled with something that looks, it's blue, it looks like water. And through the water, we can see there's some kind of structure. Now, some of you looking at this will be prone to make sure that you buffer yourself and say, well, I don't know now, you know, that could be a reflection. Well, it could be, I guess, if there was something in space with the satellite next to the camera, it could be reflecting in the water. I don't know. But it looks like the moon. I can tell from looking at this, it's not Mars, but it is one of the planets in our solar system, and it's not the moon. Now, it may come as a little bit of a surprise when I tell you that is planet Earth. And what you're looking at is way, way, way up in the Andes Mountains. The virtually the only way to get there is by helicopter. But it's not a unique site. It is not a unique site. Because all over the tops of the Andes are these lakes like this. They're deep. And the water's very clear. And you can see things in them. For instance, the picture I just put up is another one of these lakes. There's a little bit of a thin, very thin cloud layer, but we can see through it. It just makes things a little hazy. Nevertheless, you can see that in this lake, there is very clearly, without any question, a stepped pyramid and a big complex that covers the whole of the bottom of that lake. A big, huge complex. Well, it gets a little more interesting. Because when we look at the first one, we can see there's some kind of structure. You really can't tell too much about it. It's a long rectangular kind of a structure with a little earpiece out to the side. But in the second photograph, we're looking into a different lake up in the top of the Andes. Now, look, let me tell you before we go any further, and then I'll bring Jerry in here in just a second. Don't get too excited about this and write to me and ask me for the Google Earth coordinates on this, because I didn't do Google Earth on this. This is from a video. There's a bunch of videos on YouTube that have these same photographs. Other people have found them. Okay? So I don't do Google Earth. And why? I don't have time. I don't have time to go look for this stuff. All right? So these were done. These are Google Earth, and these are on YouTube. And if you are smart, you will have subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, and the link to these, to the video, will be in this edition. All right, but you can see there's a stepped pyramid down there, and a very long complex running left and right of the picture. But the next one is really astounding, because in the next one we see what looks like a very, very complex city underwater in a lake in the top of the Andes. Now, this is big enough that I could not get the whole lake in the picture, but it's huge. It's absolutely huge. The only thing about it is I thought, man, look at that. That is a huge city sitting on the bottom of that lake. Until I zoomed in. And when I zoomed in, I saw it was not a city. It is an industrial complex. If you look very closely at the zoom of that photograph that's on your screen right now, you will see a couple of things of great interest. For instance, you can see that there is some rather intricate piping in the lower right-hand corner. Well, I pushed the wrong button. Let me get that picture back up for you. You can see that there's some intricate piping in this lower right-hand corner. You can see that there is what appears to be some kind of central, maybe a control tower or something, at the very top of the picture in the center. There's also, very obviously, some kind of machinery just to the right of that. And I found it very interesting. On the left side, you can see what looks like the fins of a cooling radiator. And if you have difficulty seeing those, let me mark those for you. They're right there. There's three of them, and there's three of them right there. Three and three. And it looks like the fins of a cooling radiator. Remember, this is underwater. The whole complex is underwater. And again, it's not the only one. They're all over the Andes. In this photograph, you can see that the Earth, it is Andes, it is the Earth, and but it's a little bit more the color of Mars in this one. But we have basically circular lake. And again, looking down into the water, we can see that there is a massive building down there. What are these? Who built them? What are they for? In this one, I can't even begin to tell you what this one is shaped like. It's shaped kind of like a butterfly, I guess. And this one, almost the entire bottom of the lake is taken up by a huge complex. And this one is shaped a little bit like a potato. And there's a huge complex down there, but it doesn't take up the whole bottom of the lake. Notice, though, that you have something attached. Part of the buildings are sort of attached to the shore. And we have that same sort of arrangement with this other picture, in that we have the buildings attached to the shore. Now that's pretty clear. I mean, all of these are very clear. What are these? Where did they come from? Are they recent or ancient? Well, I have to tell you, I think they're ancient. We'll be back right after this. We're back, and tonight my associate host is my co-host, although we haven't heard much from him because I haven't given him a chance to speak, but we shall do so now. Jerry, were you able to see any of the pictures I put up?
Oh, that was great, Kevin. Good stuff.
Well, I'm going to put something back up here, and I'm going to explain why I think these are ancient. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here is the complex that I was talking. We'll come back to this, but here is the complex that I said that is a massive industrial complex. But, and it looks like it could be of modern construction, except we have other things in other lakes that are very definitely of the ancient Mayan, Inca, Aztec kind of construction. There's no way, I guess, to know which of them that is until you dive down into the lake and take a look. And it may not be them. It may not be Mayan, Aztec, or Inca. It may be of extraterrestrial origin. But we have this pyramid and temple complex, or I'm assuming it's a temple complex. It looks very much like the complexes that have been found out on the surface of the ground. And they are ancient. They're not, I guess ancient's a relative term. They're a couple of thousand years old or several hundred years old to maybe 2,000 years old in some cases. And so I think these in this lake, I think maybe have been there as long or longer. Now, in the guest that I had last night talked about how, you know, in the Greeks said that in the beginning there were some beings that came up out of the oceans and came up onto land and talked to them and taught them language and science. I think there's every possibility when we look at this. I mean, if we were just looking at this picture that where we're looking at the pyramid and temple complex down in the water, if that's the only one we were looking at, I would say, okay, well, that was one time out on the surface, and for some reason it's now underwater. Hard to imagine how that could be when you look at this picture, but okay, I could buy that. But when you look at this industrial complex, you know, you gotta wonder. I mean, this looks like it could be some sort of huge power-generating operation. And it is possible, when we zoom out and take a look at this zoomed out, we can see that on the left side of the picture, there is an area that looks like smaller buildings, smaller houses clustered over on the left side. And in fact, it sort of includes this area. Maybe those are smaller, you know, structures in which maybe someone was living and perhaps still is. Who knows? But I've got one more thing I want to show, and then I want to get back to this complex, and we're going to ask some questions about it. Keep this complex in your mind, folks. It is a gigantic, looks like modern industrial complex. It's on the bottom of a lake on the top of the Andes Mountains. All right. And this is a Google Earth satellite photo. Remember Lake Vostok? Lake Vostok is down on Antarctica. It really made a big stir and then got really hushed up. Big stir when it was discovered, and then it got hushed up quick, really quick. NASA jumped out. JPL jumped out. They got out of it, and they said, no, we're through. We don't need to do any experiments there. Right after they found this huge magnetic anomaly on the north end of that lake. Something is keeping that lake liquid while it sets under 2 miles of ice. Now, it's not impossible. There could be some warm springs, but there'd have to be a hell of a lot of warm springs to keep that lake liquid, because it's roughly the size, I think this is the right one. I think it's roughly the size of Lake Ontario. Now, that would be some hellacious warm springs to keep that much water liquid. Something is keeping it liquid under 2 miles of ice, and there is that magnetic anomaly on the north end. And I grant you, it is complete speculation, but we're using the pictures as an example, and this is not theoretical. This exists. This complex exists on the bottom of a lake, underwater, on the bottom of a lake high in the Andes. Now, Jerry, you've been on the show before when you've mentioned that, you know, you've heard stories about structures on the bottoms of these lakes, and that you would like to be able to explore those sometime. I don't know if you're going to get to do that. You will have to scuba dive to do it, but nevertheless, you're getting to see some pictures of them tonight. So the picture that I've got up right now is the zoomed-in version of the industrial complex, is what I'm calling it. So let me just ask you, does this look to you like an industrial complex?
Yeah, it does. It really does. And the other images you were showing, they as well look like something is under the water. One of the things that people have a tendency to think when they consider looking through water, and this is really old, might be, well, if that's the case, why isn't it a muddy bottom? Why isn't it full of sediment? And how could this be standing and all that old, and still you can see this distinctive feature that's being shown either here or the other photos you were bringing up. The answer to that also explains why this is kind of blue. These lakes are above 17,000 feet in elevation. They have no dirt. This is volcanic, and these are places where there were possibly some glaciers or some glaciation. That and rainfall, of course, it fills these things up with water. And the water is absolutely the purest that you can find. It's incredible how clear it is and how pure it is. Not all lakes in the Andes are as clear as this. There are those that are black. At the northern Peru, the Seven Lakes of the Wizards, or the Seven Lakes of the Pleiades, however you want to phrase it, there's a black lake there, and there is a blue lake. When you're up there and looking at these, they don't look nearly as aqua as these look. They look a bit more bluish, kind of like Lake Titicaca looks a bit bluish. But the water is clear. It's phenomenally clear. So you'd be you could very easily see all the way to the bottom. You paddle out across it, you could see it.
Well, and anyone who's ever been to the Mediterranean, or if they've been to the Caribbean, generally speaking, you know, you can see 100 feet into the water. It's just very, very, very clear water. And so we know those conditions do exist elsewhere. And that's not hard to understand that it exists here. Again, folks, if you have Google Earth, go to YouTube and find these, and some of them, some of the various videos have the coordinates written on them. I didn't use those because I didn't want the coordinates messing up what we were looking at. Okay, so I use the ones that don't have the coordinates. This looks to me like a power generating station. There are just certain features about it that look to me like a power generating station. There's very intricate piping. There are things that look like radiator fins. That's what it looks like to me. But what does it look like to you, Jerry?
Well, it looks very much like that to me. Kathy walked in here to bring me a cup of coffee a couple minutes ago, and she's looking at the screen. She said, "Oh, that's in such and such and such a place." And I said, "Yeah, I guess that's about right." She says, "No, I've researched this pretty thoroughly, and I've been studying the lakes in the upper Andes for a couple of years."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "There are quite a number of them that seem to have these structures. Why don't we take off and go down there for 2 or 3 weeks and just get in there and try to figure it out?"
Well, you know something, I admire her for saying that, but there are no roads.
No, of course not. The places we go, there are no roads, Kevin. These places, she's already figured out logistics. It would require a jeep to a point and then walking for probably about 25, 30 miles across from 14,000 to 17,000 feet.
And then when you get there, are you going to scuba dive?
No. I'll tell you what, there are two issues with diving at that elevation. I am a certified diver. And one of the big issues is your underwater time. If you happen to go diving, if you haven't acclimated for at least a week, mm-hmm, before you dive in water like that, you could suffer an embolism. Plus, when you are underwater, your time underwater is greatly reduced because the amount of pressure that's on you at that elevation. You would think that it wouldn't be like that, but at least the folks that I've spoken to that have advised me, they say that it's a dangerous thing to do, that you have to really know what you're doing. And of course, Kathy's not certified. I wouldn't go diving by myself. However, I would go snorkeling, and that brings up the second issue. The water is so incredibly cold, you'd need a dry suit.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, yeah, you'd have to have a helicopter to get you up there because you'd need to have your equipment with you.
All right. Now, if you go diving there, you know, snorkeling or whatever, and you jump into the water above this complex, you know, if this thing's still occupied, if it's still functioning, even if it's not occupied, it's still functioning, it may have defense systems built in. You jump in the water, you know, you may get zapped.
Well, that may be the case, but I think throwing a rock in would tell you pretty quickly.
Okay, well, you're a braver man than I am. I don't mind dark buildings with burglars and other nefarious criminals in them. I can handle that, but this kind of thing, I'm staying out of the water.
Oh, I'm not worried about going down and encountering something like that. I think the worst of it would be the cold, because I don't take the cold very well.
All right. Well, we have to take a break, and Jerry, you can warm up while we take the break. And we'll be back, folks. Don't go away. We've got more interesting stuff coming up. It is the Kevin Smith Show, indeed, and co-hosting with me this evening, Jerry Wills. Jerry, as I said at the beginning, these pictures are fantastic, but they're not the point.
Exactly.
They help make the point. The point is this. Again, there are new archaeological discoveries all the time. Places found, things found that we never thought we would find, or in some cases didn't even know existed. Recently, as a matter of fact, just before Christmas, archaeologists working in Israel, in the town of Bethlehem, uncovered the remains of a house from the era in which Jesus would have been alive. It's the only, you may not think that's a big deal, except it's the only one they've ever found.
Well, Kevin, that really helps them to substantiate the story that they've been feeding to us for quite a while.
Which is?
Well, you know, the generalized version of history. The history that whoever they are, they want us to ascribe to and to believe in as completely as possible. Believing in something like this, that an advanced culture was here 10,000, 20,000 or longer years ago, that doesn't fit the paradigm, and that's not what they want us to believe. They don't even want us to think about it because it might damage the power structure, I think.
And that is the point. That is the point that we're making here. The point is, folks, new archaeological finds are reported on a regular basis. And the governments don't come in and shut it down. Nobody, there's no earthquakes over it. There's no, I mean, it's just, wow, that's neat, that's cool. But there are some that get shut down. Now, I'll give you an example. Dr. Robert Schock, a geologist, was able to discover, doing ground-penetrating radar at the Sphinx, that there is indeed a chamber under the right paw, front paw, of the Sphinx. And he said it has structure to it. It seems there's something in it because of the way the radar waves were bouncing back. We don't know what's in it, but it seems like there's something in it, and it's pretty good size. He said maybe 25 meters across. Okay, now, why is it that the Egyptian authorities have not allowed that to be excavated? They'll go dig in the middle of the freaking desert and move tons of sand. Why have they not allowed any excavation into that chamber?
Probably because they already know what's there and they don't want to have the responsibility of releasing that information. If they did, then we would all know.
Well, you know, Edgar Cayce said that, at least my understanding of this, and I may have it wrong, but my understanding is that he said that that's where they would find the Hall of Records.
Right.
I've also heard that he said they would find it in the labyrinth, which has also been discovered. And nobody's excavating it either. And, you know, I think the point can be made, and I think it can be best said this way. There are some of these archaeological sites that get shut down and others don't, and maybe the reason is that some of them, though ancient, ain't us. Just like that stuff on the bottom of the lakes up in the Andes. Now, I don't care how advanced you think the Mayans were, folks, and they were. I don't care how advanced you think the Aztecs and the Incas were. They were. I doubt that they were advanced enough to build a giant industrial complex on the bottom of a lake, high in the mountains. Now, let's say that they did. Now, I'm looking at this. I can tell that this doesn't look like stone structure. But even if it were, they would have had to carry these materials to the very heights of the tops of the Andes. And then they would have had to have some way to scuba dive and do construction underwater. That goes beyond belief. Somebody built this. I don't think there's any possibility we're looking at ancient Olmec, Mayan, Inca, Aztec, or any of those guys. I don't think any of them could have built this, but someone did.
Well, Kevin, the Inca, all the way back through to the more ancient cultures, so far they've not discovered, they being the archaeologists, they've not discovered that the Inca used the wheel at all, yet they had sophisticated roads that ran through the Andes. Of course, it wasn't the Inca that built them. We go back even further to the Wari. The Wari are one of the oldest cultures down there. They didn't have the wheel. And the next oldest culture that there is has a very sophisticated writing that Kathy and I saw on our last trip down. And no one knows who they are or what this language is, but it's very beautiful, quite eloquent. And they are only known as, like in Stargate, they're only known as the Ancients.
All right, now, is it possible that when an archaeological site runs across either the high technology, the actual high technology from the very ancient past, indicating either there was a time when Earth was populated by humans that were excessively highly technological, or that extraterrestrials have been here and built bases here, and I think what we're looking at here on this screen is just that. I think we're looking at an ancient construction that very well could have been part of, if not the entire, base.
Well, Kevin, one of the things that we find in the research that we do that's quite a paradox is that there are things that are found that are extraordinarily sophisticated, impossible to explain, and they're basically walked away from by the researchers because who wants to spend their time on things that cannot be explained when there are so many other sites that can be? A good point in case here, there is a new archaeological discovery that was made about 3 years ago. It is the first location west of the Rio Mayo in northern Peru that belonged to the Chechepoyas. A little background quickly on the Chechepoyas: they were tall, fair-skinned people who pretty much look like you and I. Now, this site would have had 150,000 warriors and who knows what else. It's a very large site. It's only now being excavated to where they can get a proper look at it. Kathy and I were approached through Expeditions TV to go in and document it for the Peruvian government. And it's explainable. And of all things, they found a woman whose body is completely tattooed. It's a mummy, of course. She's not alive any longer. But they discovered this mummy. That's something that can be explained. Nearby, within 30 miles of Cajamarca, this other site is within 40 miles, 45 miles of Cajamarca. Within 30 miles of Cajamarca in northern Peru, there is a waterway that winds its way from one of these glacial lakes that you have in the pictures, not one specifically, but one very much like that. It uses an advanced form of hydraulics to move the water from the lake to Cajamarca when it was operational. It's still in place. Everything is still the same, except it's full of dirt here and there. But incredibly enough, these folks would tunnel directly through a mountain, maintaining the proper angle for the aqueduct, and go through an entire mountain.
All right, Jerry, we have to go through an entire break, and we'll be back, folks, right after this.
Ona, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My co-host this evening, Jerry Wills, and we're talking about, well, we've talked about some photographs, amazing photographs, actually from Google Earth, but we've talked about them from the standpoint that they help us make the point. Those photographs are not the point. They help us make the point. Now, Jerry, let me just check and make sure that you have been able to stay with me through the break. Are you still there?
I'm here.
Very good. All right. And folks, we'll open the telephone lines in just a moment. But for right now, I've got just a little bit more that I want us to develop, and then we'll open the phone lines. All right. Now, I hear criticisms like the one I mentioned from a skeptic that was on television. Well, why don't we find skyscrapers if they're so smart? Let me ask all of you, everybody listening, to consider the tallest skyscraper you've ever seen. I want you to think of it. It's any skyscraper, even if it's old, is an engineering marvel. Well, there's certainly, if there are extraterrestrials, they would be smart enough to build those, right? All right, now let me ask you, how many people it took to build one steel girder that goes in that skyscraper? Well, there had to be miners that were mining the ore, and then there had to be people, there were a lot of miners, And then there were people that worked in the offices of those mines, and there were security people for the mines. And then the ore goes from there to a processing plant where it is turned into sheets of steel. And there are hundreds of people working there. And by the way, somebody had to build those buildings and factories to turn that ore into steel. So there were thousands of people involved in that. And then the sheets of steel are milled into, are formed into these I-beams per the specifications of the architect. And so that process takes hundreds of people, thousands maybe. And then there are people that work in the offices, the administration of the steel mill. And then there's the security people. And then, of course, there's all those thousands of people that are producing the electricity and the natural gas that runs the steel mill, all to build one girder that goes into that one skyscraper. Now, imagine that you are a spacefaring people. Imagine that you are the extraterrestrials and you're traveling across space. Would you have all of that with you? No, you would not. You wouldn't have a steel mill. You wouldn't have all the natural gas production equipment. You wouldn't. I mean, you get here, and what do? You've got high technology, and you have knowledge of high technology, but you don't have all those other things that it would take to build the skyscrapers. So what do? There's nothing here on the planet when you arrive except, just the planet's natural. So you use whatever is available. What's available, you look around, and hey, there's rocks everywhere. So let's build our cities, our camp, our base, and we'll use these rocks. But Jerry, even the rocks indicate that someone with high technology was involved, because at Pumapunku, you have rocks that have these grooves in them, and these rocks are diorite. The only thing harder than diorite is diamond.
Exactly.
You have to have a high-speed diamond-tipped bit to put that groove, or you have to have laser to put that groove down that massive rock. And then, evenly spaced down through that groove, are holes that have been drilled into the groove, and each one of them is precisely the same size and precisely the same depth and evenly spaced, precisely. Now, what you're looking at is very high technology, not available to the natives of the time.
No, it's ridiculous to think that the natives or the locals who have spent their lifetimes trying to drill a perfect hole into a stone.
Well, they didn't have anything to drill it with. They didn't have anything to put a groove in that rock with. Because
that's exactly right. No, you're completely accurate in your depiction of this. You know, when we go on expedition, the way we pack is the way that I think these spacefarers would have, in some like way, they would have packed as well, the things you are going to need. And if you need to make a structure, there's rocks, there's trees. It's time for Survivor Man on an extraterrestrial basis.
At the top of the show, you're exactly right. At the top of the show, Jerry, I talked about the fact that NASA has found this big hole in the moon. It's a little over 200 feet across, and it's very deep. And they're saying, you know, that might be a pretty good place to put a colony. Okay, well, we'll take all of our high-tech stuff, we'll pack it into a bird, light a fire in its tail, and send some astronauts over to the moon. And at some point, they will begin to construct a permanent base. At first, their base will not be permanent. At first, it will be modules that they've shipped up there. However, if it's going to be a permanent base, as President Bush said, and as NASA continues to say, if it's going to be a permanent base, they're going to have to move beyond those little modules they ship up there as temporary quarters. And what NASA has been saying for a long time is, well, you use the materials that are there. Now, there's silica everywhere. So it seems to us that what we'll do is we'll make whatever buildings we need out of glass. We'll use the silica and heat it up, spin glass. We'll make the buildings out of glass. Okay, so now let's go 1,000 years forward. Now, folks, let's imagine that this permanent base has been built. Very ingenious. Our guys and gals went up there and made glass buildings. Very ingenious. Very high-tech stuff was sent up there to make that happen. Now go 1,000 years into the future. And we'll say that in some way, some measure, the moon has been terraformed. So that you don't just have a handful of people living there. You've got, you know, some pretty good-sized towns up there 1,000 years into the future. One day, an archaeologist is out digging around on the moon and comes across these glass structures. And they look very primitive to him 1,000 years in the future. Well, they are primitive. It's just sand melted into glass. Yeah, they're primitive. But the people that inhabited them were not primitive. They were high-tech. And I think that a lot of these archaeological sites that do get shut down and hush-hush and nobody can be here, go away. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. I think a lot of those, it's exactly that. We've come across some primitive buildings, but there's some indications there that the people that built them were not primitive, but high-tech. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, Kevin. The telltale signature that's left behind is not in the fact that they used the stones to make a building. It's how they used the stones to make the building. I think that tells the story, because every culture, every creature, I think, that's a sentient creature that would be able to travel here will want to leave their mark, their personalization on the structure they build. It may be a small little symbol, or it may be just in the way that it's made, but they always leave their signature.
Well, in at least one case, and there are some others, but at least at Pumapunku, what we've got is proof that whoever did it wasn't us. Because it's not a suggestion that it wasn't us. It's absolute proof that it wasn't us. Because you have to have high-speed diamond-tipped bits to do what was done to those rocks. And that's what engineers have said that looked at it. And they said, you've either got to have that or lasers. And, you know, they've measured it, and they're astounded. It's done with such precision, it would be difficult for us to duplicate.
We have examples of that at Expeditions TV in the video that's online called Tiwanaku. And, you know, we've run our hands over these stones, and they are incredibly smooth. Even after all these thousands of years, they're incredibly smooth.
All right, tell you what I want to do. I'm going to open the phone line. And, folks, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. That's the main number. You can call that from anywhere on planet Earth or Nibiru. The toll-free number is toll-free in the United States or Canada. And it is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the U.S. and you're outside of Canada and you don't wish to make an international long-distance call, you can send me a flash message. Just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. You will see a link, and the link says send a flash message. Just click that, and you can send me a flash message. But you must be outside the USA or Canada. Inside the USA or Canada, we got telephones, okay? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Ryan in Petersound. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you, Ryan?
I want to play a little bit of a devil's advocate bit on this.
And, all right.
My opinion might upset a few people, and I just
doesn't matter. Everybody has an opinion, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. So go for it.
Okay. I think that these images are pretty interesting, and I'm not trying to say that there's not a possibility that there's something there, but I just wanted to say that. Well, I've worked in digital imaging and graphics. It's kind of my field that I've been in for. I've been working quite in that before, I know you didn't have time to do this, Kevin, but I do know that I think what we need to do is look at the original Google images first.
Well, that's fine, but the images are not the point. The images are absolutely not the point. There is, whatever those are, there is something on the bottom of those lakes. Now, these show up both in Google. They also show up in Global Earth. They show up in any satellite photos that you will find of them on the Internet. You will see exactly the same thing, done by different satellites and done by different companies. But the images simply aren't the point.
Second, Kevin.
Hmm?
Hey, Ryan, can you hear me all right?
Pardon?
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, cool. I had the same question about the pixelation as you have, and I checked the Google Earth images, and you know the resolution they're giving it to us, it looks like it could be, but I don't know if it is or not. So Kathy got a hold of some regular satellite images and started studying those, and she started finding still some very anomalous things within these lakes.
Okay.
It was enough of a question mark to get her to continue for the past 2.5 years. We're going to go and find out. We're going to go to these lakes and see for ourselves. And, of course, when we do, this will be one of the first places it's announced is here on this show. But I understand. I've been working in digital imaging for quite a while as well. I had the very first version of Photoshop, and I know how pixelation can look.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the only concern I had, and I think since you and Kathy looked at the original satellite images, well, then they possibly could not be some sort of there might not be some sort of data loss or extraction. I mean, because when people take things off Google and they make a video on YouTube, a lot of times they compress it. They don't really know. I mean, the sad fact of it is, in my opinion, that, you know, 75% of the videos on YouTube are, you know, posted by people who probably don't know what they're doing. But as far as you look at the original satellite images, well, then Google satellite images and those are usually pretty high resolution. They usually do compressing and decompressing and changing the contrast and all this sort of stuff. So I say go for it. You know, you might be onto something there.
Now, let me ask you something. I know that, you know, as you said, your opinion might upset somebody. I think you were probably afraid it was going to upset me. It won't. Opinions don't upset me. But now, I don't want to upset you, but let me ask you if you're looking at your computer.
No, I'm not at my computer right now, but I was when you were showing the images.
Can you honestly say any of that looked like pixelation?
Well, I do know that When you decompress and you compress images and you change, there are artifacts that will show up. You know, just by changing the auto levels and the some of those things.
Do they normally show up looking exactly like a stepped ziggurat pyramid with a temple?
Well, I'm saying that there possibly could be something in those lakes, but before I would spend any money on and thousands of dollars on getting a helicopter and all this, I would just go through it and do what Kathy and Jerry are doing by looking at the original raw images before going off YouTube images.
Well, I understand, but again, these images aren't the point.
Okay.
You know, thanks for the call. And I knew that would happen. I knew folks would focus on the images. That's why I said it's not the point. These images are not the point. The point is that stuff is there. And I looked at this with satellite images from three different sources. The Google images, and then one I think is called Global Earth, and I forget what the other one is. But I looked at three different ones, and they all look the same. That stuff is there.
You're right. The images are not really what this discussion is about. They're used as a point of reference that, you know, we're not alone on this planet. We've been visited before, and the signature of those who came here before, they may not be here now.
Mm-hmm.
But they left something behind.
Well, I tell you what, they may be here now. You look at this stuff on the bottom of the lakes.
They ever left.
You look at this stuff on the bottom of the lakes. They may still be there. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Jerry. Hey, Jerry. You know, I think that if it wasn't for the unfortunate event that happened after Cortez landed, you know, I think a lot of that information of what these things actually are, I think were lost to the zealotry that happened centuries ago. But, you know...
Well, I think a lot of it was lost, but even then... these things were already ancient, and when the conquistadors, whenever they asked the natives, "Did you build these great buildings?" they were told,
"No,
we didn't build these. They were built by the ancients."
Mm-hmm. And also, so if you read the legends that are still around, there's a lot of the research is into Pumapunku and Machu Picchu and all the other those ancient places. They'll tell you that a lot of these places were metalworking places, where they actually were metalworking facilities, and that complex looks to me like it was at one time a metalworking facility. And I think it may be the remnants of a previous high civilization on this planet before the big cataclysm about 12,000 years ago.
Could be.
And yeah, you're showing it on the KSTV now, and yeah, that looks like an metal refinery. Sorry, there's a metal refinery up where I used to live when I lived up in Iroquois Falls. There used to be one up near Timmins, which is about 40 minutes from where I used to live, and I've seen that place from the air. That looks like a ore refinery.
Oil or metal?
Exactly what it looks like.
Oil or metal?
Yeah.
Oil.
Metal. Not metal, but ore. It's where they get the ore out of the metals and whatnot and smelting. That's exactly what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you know, in that part of the world, there are several metals that are quite densely populated in those mountains. Copper is one. Iron, there's a lot of iron. And there's a lot of gold. And, of course, silver.
And there's tin. Teotihuacan, I think, means something about tin, from what I've read.
All right. Well, Kevin, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, I think that you know, when we look at this very high-tech on the bottom of the lake ruins, maybe it's not ruins, but it is a remnant of some previous civilization. We're looking at extreme high technology. Not just, you know, they were pretty smart. We're looking at extreme high technology. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
I'm Ron from Maryland.
Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I have a theory, okay, and I don't know, well, I don't know if it's right or not, but you know how you had Greek mythology about Hercules and all these strong people and half god and half human?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking maybe some of these temples and the pyramids and all that could have been built from the Nephilim.
Well, it could be. Now, the Nephilim, well, I tell you what, a break is taking over. You want to hang on through the break, Ron?
Sure.
All right, you hang on. I'm going to put you on hold. And when we come back, we'll take you first up. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My co-host this evening, Jerry Wills, and we have on the line with us Ron. So, Ron, you were saying that maybe this was the maybe these buildings were built by the Nephilim.
Yeah, because if you think, I think Hercules and the gods of the water and all this stuff are stories that were come back somehow before the flood, you know, and they just gave them names, like the Greeks gave them names, but they knew about them, you know. And I think that I mean, they were giants and strong, so and half god and half human. So I mean, I'm just wondering if they you know, could have built some of these structures.
Well, it could be. Captain Cook, have you ever heard of Captain Cook? Famous?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When he sailed to South America, he not only encountered giants, he captured one and put him on board the ship and tied him to the mast and was going to keep him captured and take him back to England. However, the giant broke the mast, broke his ropes, jumped in the water, and swam to shore. That's an entry in Captain Cook's actual logbook.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so there were, definitely, there were giants. And
in fact, in Santa Maria in southern Ecuador, it's a site we haven't gotten to yet, but this area is a big desert now, but there's a well there that was dug through solid stone several hundred feet straight down to the water table, and it was dug by giants. And the local bits of information that have surfaced from the archaeologists who studied the area say that there were giants who washed up on shore in a boat, a broken boat, and they inhabited that region. They killed and ate a lot of the people, and it was just a pretty ugly situation. But they dug this well, and they lived there until they were then killed by the gods for their abominations against humans.
Hmm. All right.
If you're 15 feet tall and you're really strong, I mean that's mammoth strength, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if that could, like up in the Himalayas, if that could have, they could have cut into that rock being giants, but
no, they still have to have something harder than the rock. And the only thing harder than the rock would be a high-speed diamond-tipped bit.
Mm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Hey, Ron, thanks for the call, man.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Interesting point. Maybe, you know, look, you know, there were giants. There just were. And it's a matter of actual recorded history. And it's not just mythology. It's actual recorded history in fairly modern times. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin and Jerry. This
Hi
is
there.
Larry from Illinois.
Yeah, Larry.
Yeah, just as a thought, if you know any remote viewers, you might want to have them remote view these sites, see what they come up with.
Good idea. I happen to know several. So
I think that would be an interesting thing to to know what they say.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate the suggestion, and I will, in fact, call one in the morning and see if he would be willing to do it.
Good
okay.
idea.
Yeah. Thanks. All right. 623-444-5889 is the number, the main number. And if you wish to call me on the toll-free number, it is 888-223-4599. If you happen to be outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message by going to my website. Scroll down. You'll see the link right there under the picture about tonight's show. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Jerry. It's Rick from Kentucky.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Rick.
How you doing?
Good.
I have been sitting here for the past week, I guess. I watched Conspiracy Theory on TV the other night. I don't know if you all watched it, but it really got me thinking about all the secrecy we have. And I consider people like Jerry and Kathy modern-day explorers.
Mm-hmm.
And, every time it seems like archaeologists and Kathy or Jerry and some of the places they go attempt to make it a discovery, something new, there's the powers that be, whoever they are, whatever they are there to stifle them, keep the information from us. I think it's similar to what you said about the paw of the Sphinx. You know, we know there's a cavern or something underneath the paw, but the Egyptians won't let us open it now. Well, if they had had that same attitude in the early 1900s, Lord Carvin or whoever he was, we would probably never have found Tutankhamun. You know, they were more than glad to have us dig back then and make discoveries for them, and they're still profiting from it today in their country.
Well, you have to understand that one of the ways they profit, as well as the sites themselves, is all of these PhD experts writing books, and a whole industry grows up around what the experts say about what they're looking at.
Yeah.
Now let me just and Jerry, you correct me if I'm wrong. Let me just give you a real quick example on this side of the planet. All the experts about Mayans, it amazes me. They knew absolutely nothing about these people. They started uncovering these sites, and there were all these mysterious carvings, and they speculated about what all of those meant. And they speculated that the Mayans were just a very, very easygoing, peaceful people who just were stargazers. Well, then along came this really bright guy who figured out how to read the Mayan text. Mm-hmm. And what they discovered is they were anything but peaceful. They did human sacrifice. They were a tough bunch. Now, were they smart? Yeah, they were smart. Did they were they able to do incredible things? Yes, they were. Did they do human sacrifice? Yes, they did. So, you know, it once we had experts telling us A, when A was not true, But it was a big industry, and they sold a lot of books, and there were a lot of PhDs granted on the basis of their nonsense. And the same thing is going on with Egyptology today.
Yeah. It's not only Egypt. I think Jerry's even run into some problems in South America getting access to sites, the Grand Canyon caves. You know, you can't go there.
Yeah, you know, we had a real set of issues with the Grand Canyon case. We actually found where the entrance is. But towards the end, we ran into some really intense issues up there. Myself and several other people were all there when these things started happening. And then, of course, there was when we were looking for the giants up at Mount Trumbull and in the southern Utah and northern Arizona Badlands area. We ran into some really scary issues with the government watching everything we did just in case we found something. So we had to call off that investigation because it was made very clear to us by these people that we were being watched and that if we didn't go to jail, somebody was going to. So we said, heck with this, enough, and we just pulled the plug on it.
Do you really think, Jerry, that it was the Bureau of Land Management that was making that decision, though?
I'm absolutely certain of it. But we did check our site files to find out who was visiting the site where we were posting, because we post the information of what we find on the Internet like we do now. We did that then, with the idea being knowledge belongs to each of us. So we freely posted it, and we discovered that there were alphabet agencies we'd never heard of that were visiting the site, plus all of them that we knew about.
And they're here with us tonight, too.
Yeah. Wonder
why
the Bureau of Land Management didn't stop some of them from going in. I don't know.
All right.
I hope if somebody goes to Peru to investigate these lakes that you don't run into problems there, but I would just about guess that you will.
Well, look, thanks for the call.
About that area is that there are very few people there. I doubt that we'll run into any issues. We really haven't run into really too many issues when we've investigated sites in South America.
All right. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Toll free, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, it's another Kentucky boy named Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Jerry and Kevin, I hate to keep harping on this Anunnaki stuff, but I've done a lot of study over the years, you know, on various cultures and things on my own. I'm not a PhD or anything, but...
Good. That means you might actually know something.
Well, not much, but anyway, I speculate a lot. But going back to Sitchin and their Anunnaki... They were actually a very large race of people because when you look at when they created the first humans, they created them in litters. These birth mothers that they had multiple births. I don't mean one or two. They had like dogs, big litters, and they would have had to been pretty good-sized people to carry that many fetuses to term inside themselves.
Okay.
So,
but I don't think that these things on the bottom of the lake necessarily indicate giants. However, giants did exist, and I mean that's not really even up for debate. They existed, and records, fairly modern records of them, exist.
Right.
But now these things on the bottom of the lake. And whatever it is that's keeping Lake Vostok liquid beneath 2 miles of ice, that magnetic anomaly, whatever that is, it may or may not be giants, but it's not us.
No, I agree there.
Yeah.
You know, the thing I think about, though, is that I was listening to the show last night, and I didn't agree with a lot of stuff that the author had to say, a lot of his conclusions, But he jumped around. He'd use Anunnaki this and something else that. And it's kind of hard to come to a conclusion if you take a thread and break it into little pieces and then try to arrange them in different places instead of just running with a long, straight idea, a long theme.
Yeah, but you really can't do that.
What's wrong with a lot of these experts?
Yeah, okay, look, hang on. We have a break. And when we come back, I'll explain why you really can't just take Anunnaki and run with it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We are on Final Approach, and we've only got a few minutes left. Michael, you still with us?
I am.
All right. The reason you can't just do, if you're talking about the history of Earth, the ancient history of Earth, you can't just talk about Anunnaki, is because, first of all, whoever they were, the name Anunnaki is the name the Sumerians used, and they may have gone by other names in other languages. Secondly, they're not the only race of extraterrestrials that visited the Earth. So you had other races of extraterrestrials or other groups of extraterrestrials, not Anunnaki, who were visiting other parts of the Earth and who were doing various things rather phenomenally in other parts of the Earth. So, you know, just as today, you don't have just one race of extraterrestrials coming to Earth. Apparently it's been that way since the beginning of life on this planet. And so, if you're talking about in a comprehensive way about the ancient past, you can talk about the Anunnaki and their gold mines in Africa. And then you have others, I can't remember all the ones that he mentioned, but others that were doing other things, for instance, in India. And so you had different groups in different parts of the world.
Sure. I'm not disputing that. I don't have a problem with that. But when the Anunnaki first came in, yeah, and let's say, according to the Sumerian tablets, this was the word that they used.
Mm-hmm.
And when Sitchin translated it, he used the word that the Sumerian used.
Mm-hmm.
We just use the word Anunnaki.
Mm-hmm.
And according to them, they came here as a family of gods.
Mm-hmm.
They set up the first kingdoms. They set up the first everything. They divided the earth among themselves. And each one of the lesser gods went out and set up his own kingdom. So that's
That's like the Spaniards dividing up South America, but then the Portuguese came.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And they didn't recognize what the Spaniards had done. They set up their own places. And here in the United States, you had the Portuguese, you had the English, you had the Spanish, you had Russians, Germans, the French. Everybody had their own idea about who owned what. And in some cases, they claimed, in some cases, you had like two countries claiming the same piece of property, and that led to some conflicts.
Right. Go ahead, Jerry.
I was just saying, in each case, each one of these countries felt that the other country, those guys are dogs. Who are they to make claim on anything?
Yeah.
That's correct.
And so you would have had the same kind of situation with extraterrestrials. Mike, I have to run because I've got to get to this flash message, but I want to thank you for the call.
Okay. I'll have a great night.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, we have a flash message from Austria, and beautiful country, as a matter of fact. I've spent time in Vienna, lived in Vienna for a little bit. Hi, Kevin. Jerry has mentioned a few times that there were sandbanks located high in the Andes and that the complex you see was obviously caught in the deluge of water that caused the sandbanks. Well, not necessarily. They may have been built underwater. But anyway, she continues, this is Suzanne, she says, could it be that as soon as any investigator who goes into the area would be somehow blocked from undertaking any investigations because they may find technologies that have been kept back from us for many years? It sure would be interesting to see which worms come out of the woodwork to put a stop to exploring our past. Yeah, it would be. You know, until somebody explores it, though, Suzanne, we don't know if these were built underwater or if they're underwater since the deluge.
Well, you know, Kevin, if we decide to go up there and take a look at it, which we likely will, we'll have the Spot Messenger system with us, and all your listeners will be able to follow us in real time, live, online. This is a locator beacon. Then they can watch as we move from point A to point B.
Well, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Jerry, would it surprise you to know that somebody tried to keep us from being able to do the show tonight?
I'm not surprised. Who was it this time?
I don't know yet. I will. But the frame rate at which we broadcast is 60 frames per second. And we're being hit hard, and it's dragging us down to around 14.
Well,
so I'm looking. It's running 14, 15 frames per second with a broadcast rate of 12.12. So we're being our connection right here is being hit hard, and I expected it would as soon as I put that picture up. On the website.
I'm monitoring your broadcast at this end, Kevin, and it's still watchable.
Yeah, it's a little jerky, and the audio-video is not synchronized as well as it normally is, but there you have it. Folks, even this information, somebody doesn't want you to have it. That's why the Kevin Smith Show exists, and that's why you need to support the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you who are new, you need to know, I don't take a salary from this. Do I, Jerry?
No, not at all. Neither do I.
And, Jerry, you've seen how I live. Do I live in luxury?
No. Not at all. No, you don't.
Well, folks, when you support the show, you help us to continue to be able to research, you help us to continue to be able to find great guests, you help us to continue to be able to afford all that goes into this. And Jerry, just in these last few moments, let me turn to you, and because a lot of people probably, I'm just assuming that a lot of people think I overstate the case. You've been doing the show now. You filled in for me whenever I was out of town, and then you've done the Kevin Smith Show Weekend Edition, and you don't do it from this studio. You have a studio where you are, and you do it. So let me ask you, is it rather daunting, perhaps overwhelming?
Oh, my God, is it ever. You know something, folks? Tune in on Saturday. I'll probably go into it a little bit if I have time, but I'm surrounded by computers, thousands of dollars worth of software, cameras, computers, screens. I'm telling you, my gosh, it really is quite a thing to put a show like this out and to do it every night, Kevin. I'm astonished because I'm an engineer by my training. And this should be easy for me, and it is sort of, but you know, when you've got to be watching three screens all the time, talking to your guests, watching the phone lines, pushing the right button at just the right time, that takes a lot of focus. And by the end of the show, you know, and sometimes we do after hours, and by the end of the show, I'm just wiped out.
And then when the show is over, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't know how you continue to go late into the night because you go through and process all this stuff, you get it up online, you do all this and that, and gosh, you know, by the time the show is over, I'm just ready to collapse.
And I was going to say, and when the show is over, that's when the work begins.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, anyway, I want you to know that I appreciate what you're doing, and I think you're doing a great job. I've watched the shows that you did, and you will, of course, continue to host our weekend edition. And you do a phenomenal job. Jerry, stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. I hope you've enjoyed it. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.